What's happening, everyone? Welcome to our hat trick. This is our third podcast, and I'm delighted to be joined by the one, the only Boovy. Before we get into it, there is an awful lot to dissect. I must quickly say, please do us a favour. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, every other podcast provider, please leave us a nice review. It massively helps us out. I am not intelligent enough nor articulate enough to tell you how important it is. So just suffice it to say, it is so important. Please help us out on that front. It will be forever appreciated. And if we look in the comments and see your name there, Boovy will buy your pint.
I will. Thank you. As long as it's not a certain pub in Hackney that we all pretend to like but it's actually terrible, then I won't do it.
Sorry, can I just interject as well? 1 week at the top of sport podcasts in the UK.
Can I get a ooh?
Yeah, that's fantastic, mate.
That is huge. I think there's only one place to start, and that is National, International Sean Dyche Day.
Yeah, he's Jesus reincarnate in Merseyside.
In the world.
It's unbelievable.
Generous to call it a hairline.
Is it a hairline?
I think it's a bald.
He has got a bit of hair.
It's a bald.
And that bit of hair was on the touchline against a win against the top side in the Premier League. No one saw it happen. It's their second loss of the season in the league.
Did you say nobody saw it happening?
I knew they'd get a result.
I think it's
a result of Goodison Park when there's a new manager.
I think it's being portrayed as being a shocking. There's an element of shock to it. Mm. And look, I know it's easy to be very intelligent after the fact, but I don't think it's quite so shocking to go to. But it's the worst possible fixture you can have. Nobody in the world wants to go to Goodison Park for Sean Dyche's baptism. It's the worst possible invite, and Arsenal was so unfortunate, which is why I don't think it's a big deal for Arsenal, this defeat. Of course, how they bounce back from it is really what's going to decide how they progress for the rest of the season. But ultimately, history wasn't on their side. The fixture list wasn't on their side. If they played, you know, certain things in football, right? Certain things in football are, when they're hypothetical, it's very difficult to give anything other than an opinion. Mm. But this is something that I can say, this factually happens in a hypothetical conversation. Mm-hmm. If Arsenal had gone to Goodison Park 3 weeks ago to face Frank Lampard's Everton, Arsenal win the game 5-1. Yep. I could see it now.
Of course.
I think they're 3-0 up at half-time. Martinelli's having a field day. Iwobi gets one back and rallies and gets the ball out of the net, and Arsenal score two more.
100%, yeah.
So Arsenal have actually been done by circumstance.
I think you're being far too generous on Arsenal. I think you're not giving enough credit to Everton. I think this was more than a new manager bounce. I think this was Arsenal actually really poor. I thought the first half they were poor. I think Everton, incredibly, could have been 3-0 up in the first half. Decore header, Dominic Calvert-Lewin missed a kind of Paul Gascoigne against Germany kind of opportunity, 5 yards out, slid in, missed it, and then another header for 45 minutes just before half time. Everton outplayed Arsenal in every area of the park, especially in midfield. And the reason I'm saying that I don't think you're being generous enough is because these players are at that level to be beaten sides like Arsenal on their day. They are. The starting 11 for Everton are top 10 side, in my opinion. They're top 10. There's a mixture of experience, there's a mixture of talent.
So who do you think I'm being too generous to? Too generous to Arsenal?
I think you're being too generous to Arsenal, and the fact that Arsenal, it was a day off, it was a kind of once in a blue moon, a new manager at Everton bounce. I thought actually Arsenal were pretty poor. I don't think they created enough chances in the final 20 minutes. Odegaard, I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm a City fan, I don't like Arsenal, all that. I do think Arsenal didn't show enough
Nobody
quality.
Wins there that day. Nobody goes to Goodison Park on that day. Goodison Park is one of the best away grounds in the country. It's one of the most intimidating atmospheres
Jürgen
in
Klopp's
the league.
Liverpool? When they won the league? When he got 97 points, came second?
Okay, look, there are teams in history that would have won there. Jose Mourinho's 2005 team would have probably beaten Sean Dyche's Everton as well. Yeah. But you must concede that there is some truth to what I'm saying. Playing Everton on that day is the worst possible fixture that you can have.
My issue is we've gone from a discussion that we've obviously done a few weeks ago on this show that two weeks ago we're talking about they're at a points tally halfway through a season comparable to the Centurions, more than the Invincibles. So we're comparing this Arsenal side, rightly or wrongly, to some of the best sides to ever play football in this league. Mm-hmm. People are doing that.
Yeah,
they should be going to Everton. You can take away, I think the Man City result has softened the kind of critical understanding of what happened in Liverpool for Arsenal, because obviously City haven't made any ground on Arsenal now. So the loss doesn't really count for anything. But we are talking about Arsenal being potentially halfway through a season, an unbelievable side. They didn't look good enough for me. They didn't build play well enough.
They didn't, but it's their first defeat since September.
Yeah, of course.
And in context, sure, look, it's their first defeat since September. They've only lost four times all season in all competitions.
Mm.
They've gone to Goodison Park to face Sean Dyche on the worst possible circumstance. And that they've actually got away with it on some level because City didn't catch them up. Equally, City kind of got away with their defeat.
Yeah.
And it's a bogey ground for City. City got away with their defeat because Arsenal didn't make the most of it.
Yeah, of course.
But I think nothing is significant. Nothing is to worry about if you're an Arsenal fan until you play Brentford.
Mm.
Play Brentford and win. And then you play City and draw, maybe even lose. Like the whole point of securing a cushion, the whole point of being above City is so that when you play them, you don't have to beat them.
Yeah.
Like that's what you want.
Yeah.
If they go to Brentford, or I can't remember where that is, but if
it's at home.
It's at home, okay. Yeah. When they play Brentford, if they beat Brentford, everything is fine. If they draw to Brentford and then they've taken a point out of Everton and Brentford, then I think there's a problem.
I think that I'm not trying to sit here as a City fan. Oh, I don't want Arsenal to win the league. I think they're rubbish. They're obviously
very
special.
To win the league.
They are a special side, and they could get even better because they're such a young squad. We all know that. Mm. All I'm trying to say is, look, if City were more at the races against Spurs and we beat them 1-0, ground it out, classic City, classic Guardiola with City, then it's a different narrative. Arsenal, Saturday night, before we knew the City result, Arsenal lost to Everton and they were flat. They didn't manage the game very well. They didn't create enough chances in that kind of Fergie final 5-10 minutes, putting the pressure on Everton. Everton, for me, didn't feel any pressure.
Mm.
Like
no, I agree. I never felt once Everton were 1-0 up, I never felt like Everton weren't going to win the game.
And that's fantastic from Sean Dyche. And if there's any Everton fans listening, I don't want it to be an Arsenal failed kind of understanding of the game, because on some level, Everton were absolutely incredible. And that, but that is what you should be seeing from Everton week in, week out. All I'm trying to say is, I think it's just a little bit more of a narrative there. That Arsenal, at certain moments this season, when they need to break down Newcastle and get 3 points at home, for example, just didn't quite work. That could exacerbate.
You're right.
I'm not saying it will.
If you're an Arsenal fan, look, I still think Arsenal are going to win the league. But if you're an Arsenal fan, I think that there are slight causes for concern. Mm. A few little chinks in the armour. Whereas, 3 weeks ago, I just didn't see a vulnerability.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I think that there is one. I think the reliance and... It's natural because he's such a good player. But the lack of mechanism to cope with the absence of Thomas Partey could actually be their undoing.
Well, what is your understanding?
On that as well, sorry, Rory, to bring it back to the game itself, and I know you were watching it live. Can you remember what the catalyst was for the Everton goal?
Yes, of course I can. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, it was what I've been saying for years. It was Jorginho entering the fray, bowling into the fray, or delicately meandering into the fray, and Thomas Partey vacating. Like, they can't cope without Thomas Partey. And why they've signed Jorginho, I just don't get it. I really don't. Think about their midfield, their best midfield. So when you sign a player, you're looking for somebody who can replace, right? Because it's going so well, you've got a system that works. You're not looking for as good as, but you're looking for nearly as good as. So the three that they've got, you've got Thomas Partey, Jorginho, totally incomparable as a footballer to Thomas Partey. Totally
different.
Totally different. Yeah, incomparable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
incomparable in skill, but also incomparable in what they do. Then you've got Odegaard to Jorginho. Totally incomparable. Totally incomparable on level, but totally incomparable in terms of what they can do. And then you've got Xhaka. Same applies. So they've brought in Jorginho for something different. Mm. And look, as much as I don't like Jorginho, I don't want him anywhere near Chelsea's team, and I never have done. I really, really think he's... I don't like the way that you have to play to accommodate him. I will concede that he does bring something to a team. I will concede that there is a particular system in which he can flourish.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's the way Arsenal play. I don't think it's what Arsenal need.
Do you think, by the way, because obviously they got Jorginho and they also got Trossard.
That's a good
sign.
Both
of those players were not their first choice. It was Mudryk and Caicedo.
Yeah. With Trossard, I thought that they did well there because they ultimately got blown out of the water by Chelsea's embarrassment of riches. And I'm not really that happy about that. I think that... Part of Chelsea's problem, one of the big problems that Chelsea have, is that there's a lot of mercenaries at the club. Mikhailo Mudryk told us explicitly that he didn't want to play for Chelsea.
Yeah,
he told her, like, we knew. It's not a secret. This isn't my opinion. He was on Instagram telling the world, I want to play for Arsenal. I want to be at the Emirates.
Yeah.
So Chelsea signing a player who openly admitted that he didn't want to be there and has therefore signed for Chelsea for more money, because everybody would have got richer off the back of that. That would have been richer agents, richer Shakhtar,
family
richer
members,
everybody. So that signing Trossard, I thought was actually astute. Premier League proven. If you look at his 4 years at Brighton, he's kind of split it equally, playing on the left side of a front three, playing behind the main man and playing as a main man.
Yeah.
So that's a great signing because he can play flexible. He can play instead of Martinelli or he can play with Martinelli. Yeah. He can play instead of Eddie Nketiah or Gabriel Jesus, whoever it is, or with both of them. Yeah. So I think that was a good signing. The Jorginho one, there is one quality that Jorginho will bring that could be huge and therefore maybe even a difference maker. You know, when I talk about the signing of Zinchenko being a difference maker, not only because of what he brings on the pitch, but because of what he brings off the pitch. Well, Giza's won 4 out of 5 league titles. Take him seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
Jorginho, regardless of my opinions on him as a footballer, like I like him as a bloke, you know, Jorginho.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People think, like I like him. He's wicked at the guitar. He plays Oasis and that. Have you seen him do Oasis? Yeah, yeah. Like, I reckon I'd like to have a pint with him.
Yeah.
But I just don't want him anywhere near Chelsea's midfield and never have done. I think that what he will bring to this Arsenal team, the quality will be, say when they play you, say they're 1-0 up with 20 to go.
Yeah.
Just tell him to look after the ball. He protects that ball like it's a newborn baby.
That's why I think it's a fantastic signing. I think it's unbelievable.
Fantastic?
I do. I think it's fantastic. Fantastic?
You can't think
I use the word fantastic and say I think it's a 7 out of 8 out of 10 signing. I really do. You get a guy, it's 12 million quid. So it's basically the interest that you're going to pay on the Mudryk deal almost. Do you know what I mean? It's crazy cheap. 18 months means he's got a year at least to prove himself. And if he really flops, which he could, you know, your arguments to that could be correct. He could completely fall off a cliff. That he's got no contract left. You could just let him go for free. But like
it could cost you a league title. If it's a bad signing, it costs you a league title.
He got brought on against Everton. I thought it was right. I thought Everton were grinding them down. I thought they needed more possession. They needed more pressure on the Everton back four. At times it was the kind of five midfield. They needed more possession, more concentrated possession. I thought the substitution was right. And they've been done on the corner. So it's obviously ironic for Chelsea fans and all that to see him come on and instantly Arsenal lose a game of football. But overall, I think they needed... And plus, he's 31 years old. He probably brings the average age up of that squad by a couple of years.
That's why I think on that side of things, I think it's a good signing.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you think Mikel Arteta got it wrong? You know, you just said there, did the signing before the corner. I swear, even like at our level of playing football... You don't make a substitution before you defend a set piece.
The thing with substitutions is I couldn't gauge it during the game in terms of if he'd done that. I thought it was 2 minutes, a bit of play, and then a corner.
No, I think
it was straight away.
I think Thomas Partey, and now this is where it gets really troubling for Arsenal. I think he got a knock.
Yeah.
How significant that is, I haven't heard yet.
I think it was in the FA Cup or in the game previously that he apparently
got
a knock.
They can't live without it. You know, they've lost 4 times this whole season.
Yeah.
You know, every single time Thomas Partey has either been subbed or hasn't played.
Yeah.
So,
but they lost Elneny, and I don't know where you get the physicality. I don't think you can go and get Caicedo and call yourself a kind of. I don't think it's the right play
to
get Caicedo for 90 mil is different to 60 to 50. It would have been 90 million quid. Yeah, that's what Brighton said. We got the guy on a long term contract. They could give him improved. Yeah,
they bid 60. That was the last bid.
And
I think they bid 70. And the guy said no. The Brighton owner said absolutely not. It's 90 million quid.
We've discussed Arsenal and obviously their shortcomings at the weekend. But I think we need to heap praise and discuss Mr. Sean Dyche and his return to the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sean Dyche, firstly, he deserves his job. Like going to Everton was obviously the job that he has been dreaming of for a long time. It's a huge club. It's a huge opportunity for Dyche. I think that he is good enough to manage at a top club, and Everton are certainly that. The problem is, I feel like you're scuppered at Everton. I feel like you could get Mourinho 05 in there and they will still struggle because of the mismanagement at boardroom level.
Yeah.
Like when you look at, you know, you've got that Baxendale up there and you've got Farhad Moshiri up there. It's
crazy.
It's shambolic. And what's his name from the theatre? Peter. Why have I just had a mind blank?
Kenwright.
Bill Kenwright.
Bill Kenwright. Yeah.
You've got Kenwright up there. He's a theatre producer. That's where he's those from. But he you've got all of those crowd up there who I think basically make it impossible to succeed.
Yeah.
And so for Sean Dyche to succeed where Rafael Benitez, I don't like Benitez, you know, I really don't like Benitez, but, you know, he's winning the league in Spain and Champions League. So like, he's a good manager.
Yeah.
He couldn't work in that environment.
Yeah.
You've got Carlo Ancelotti, who I think we could argue, not necessarily my opinion here at all, But there is a case to say Carlo Ancelotti is the best manager to have ever lived.
Yeah.
He couldn't make it work then.
No. And well, he had it
you've
good.
You've got Frank Lampard, the king of the world. He couldn't make it work.
Yeah.
So you've got...
It's hard. It's hard. And the energy... I think this is why I've got to give so much praise to Sean Dyche within a 48-hour window. He comes in. And don't forget, before the game, a lot of the executives at Everton, I think basically everyone that you've named, they weren't even in the ground.
But they were terrified.
Of course. But
they were terrified.
I get that on a kind of security level. But if that is the case, I think Graham Sharp didn't show up.
Yeah.
So but, we're talking about the legend, maybe the biggest name.
Do you know why though? So, like part of the reason there is, look, of course Graham Sharp was integral to their dominance in the 80s. But I think he rubbed people up the wrong way.
Yeah, he had a very strange view of it. But I think there's an argument that someone like him could even sit in the dugout, you know, right at the back. It doesn't have to be, I'm sitting there as an executive or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And that was a bad look. And it, thankfully, they got a win and the fans were absolutely incredible. Mm. The atmosphere was incredible. And Goodison Park is one of the, you know, pound for pound best stadiums probably in world football for atmosphere.
I think when I was going weekly, Chelsea home and away, Goodison was probably my favourite away day. Like, they had the wooden seats in there. Like you could bang, you could really make a racket. Yeah. And obviously, you know, it's a great old ground. I remember going there in 2008. We played them in the semi final of Europe.
Yeah,
we played them of the League Cup, like 2-legged affair, and we beat them 1-0 up there. Joe Cole scored. It's like brilliant. You know, like it was such an intense cup game. Coming out at the end was not good, but it's just like it's proper stadium, proper ground, and. As much as these big clubs, Leeds United are another example, West Ham United are another example. On some level, I would really rejoice in them going down.
Hmm.
And on another level, I just think, please don't go down because the Premier League is so much better having them in
You'll
it.
You'll get a Norwich instead.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll get a Norwich instead. Like unfortunately, it's not a Wednesday trying to come back up, unfortunately, at the moment.
You know they're down again. Wednesday are down again, you know.
They're in League One, yeah.
Yeah. But no, mate, and also the Premier League, in my opinion at least, is full of... There's far too many uninspiring...
We've got Bournemouth, not even a city,
Brentford,
with all due respect.
Brentford.
And everyone who's in the Premier League deserves it for having an incredible
season
previously in the Championship.
But they don't deserve it.
But there are some clubs that shouldn't be in the...
Yeah.
I mean, Bournemouth shouldn't be in there.
Oh, mate.
Swindon back in the 90s.
Their stadium, it's like Willesden Sports Centre.
It's crazy.
It's like Willesden Sports Centre. That's right. Like, as an away fan, you get about like 800 tickets.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They can't cope.
You're crazy.
So, boys, no, get the proper clubs back up.
Boys, we've... Get them in. What about Swindon, Roy? Would you take Swindon back?
Oh, I'll take him back because Jody Morris is there.
Well, I saw Jody Morris
and Sandro Di Michele, the dream team.
Well, I hope that no one from Swindon realises that Jody Morris actually played for Bristol City. So you can't.
Oh, is there a rivalry there as well?
Oh, yeah, you can't do that.
Are they really?
Aiden Flint stirred things up a few years ago.
Really? But, slugs Swindon. That's what I would have said usually. But I'm a big fan.
Yeah,
I'm
a big fan. Now you're second club back to Jody.
I'll go. I'll definitely go. I'd love to see Swindon.
It's nice to see... It's nice to see him on a very small level. You know,
mate, I think we should go. I think the club should have a... Yeah. If they've got a big game, maybe...
We'd have to get a horse and carriage to there. There's no roads. There's no roads in Swindon.
So we talk about one manager getting a job. Breaking news today. Leeds have sacked Jesse Marsh. Rory, you had a viral clip, was it? Or were people giving you a bit of stick?
Yeah. One of the... I'd say... Look, don't get me wrong, it wasn't my first rodeo and I've had plenty of moments where I get got, right? People get on my case. Tottenham fans are not happy with me at the moment. But the Leeds one at the beginning of this season, vitriol, poison, you know, angry. So much so, my missus from the North East, right? And I went up there and I had to change at Leeds Station around about that time.
Ooh.
And I was like a little bit, you know, I was just thinking, people at Leeds Station aren't necessarily Leeds fans. You know, people, I'm there. Yeah. I'm from North London. Like anybody could be at the station. But I was thinking, I want to go to Pret here, but I'm a little bit scared that the geezer behind
the jump. Smashing you up in Pret.
I was a bit worried,
sake.
Man.
No,
I was
smashing
bit...
Pret is a universal safe place.
Do you think?
Yeah, go to New York, go to anywhere, you know, Yorkshire.
You think it's a safe space?
Yeah, it's Pret, mate.
Because do you know what I was thinking about Pret?
£5.99 for a sandwich.
Do you know what I was thinking about Pret, why it was safe as well? Very transient population. Like, what I was scared of was, like, the Leeds native who hates me.
You don't want to go into a Leeds United
pub.
A pub. With a Chelsea badge on your arm.
Yeah, you know what I mean? A pub round the corner from Ellen Road is where I'm getting done. I'm getting headbutted within
seconds. You're going missing, mate. Yeah. You're going missing. Kidnapped. I'll be sat here by myself next week, so don't do that.
Kidnapped. No, so that's how bad it was. But anyway, this clip went out at the beginning of the season, or just when Marsh... Yeah, the beginning of the season, I think it was. And in the clip, I just said that he will be... I think we were talking about like manager sat this season.
Mate, yeah.
And I said, Marsh, I just said, it's just not a fit.
You ain't got nothing about him. You got nothing about him. Obviously... There'll be people listening to this podcast that kind of say it's a rudimentary thing to say, oh, he's American. Americans can't make it over. And the Bob Bradley thing and the whole getting at the wrong formation and using the word soccer. And
mate, it was an amazing one. Did you see the most amazing one? Have you seen the most amazing one of him now?
No, go on.
He was asked. They said something along the lines of, this is recent. This is a week or two ago. They went, we think that there's pressure. You know, Radrazzani, San Francisco, whatever it is, there's pressure on you. We think that you could be losing your job. How do you feel about these rumours? He went, they are total BS.
I saw one of the American lads who plays for Leeds saying, yeah, I started my career outside back. I thought, yeah, I want you to get relegated.
Yeah.
I want Rotherham in the league.
What does that mean?
Outside back is the fullback. Outside of the centre back.
Okay. But I wouldn't even
the fact that I, even after working in football media for years and being a fan for 20 years of my life, and I have to then dissect what this guy means about football in this country. I thought, I want you to get relegated quicker than I can say bingo.
Do you think they are down?
Yeah, I want them to go down as well.
Do you?
Yeah, because if they don't go down, maybe Wolves a little bit.
Now, Wolves are going nowhere.
But they're not going. That's the point.
Wolves are going nowhere.
So Bournemouth go down, Southampton go down, two of the driest clubs going, with all due respect, and Leeds... Just because they stuck with Bielsa too long, in my opinion, last season. I know they sacked him, but... They were gone halfway through the season. They were really poor. Everton aren't going to go anywhere. Sean
Dyche, they're not going anywhere. I agree. I thought they would, you know. Look, there is still jeopardy around Leeds. Around Everton, simply because of the running of the club. Like, sure,
yeah, but that's long. That's the 6 or 7 weeks in the summer transfer window. They go out and spend £5 million on some left back, and he's terrible. That's what you're right about. But Sean Dyche has got an 11 there that he can build around for the next 6 months and keep him up. 100%. And the only thing that's going to suck Leeds, the pressure has been put on Leeds, and this is why it's such a poor decision. They should have done it early. They should have done it because they were getting beat early in the season. And again, they keep conceding goals. Wolves moved early for Lopetegui. Unbelievable business. Whatever you say about Southampton, they made a move. Hasenhüttl was the wrong decision. He's actually been linked to the Leeds job today. Bournemouth... moved early. It's wrong. They've moved
last man standing. That's the problem.
The contenders, boys.
I mean, I know who it's going to be.
Have a guess. Then
I think it's going to be Marcelo Bielsa.
I was going to say that.
But the second favourite, 3-1. West Brom boss, Corberan. It's the Fav. Then it goes Bielsa, Pochettino, Hasenhüttl, Ange Postecoglou. And
do you know who they should go for? From that list that Elliot just read out there, they have to. The answer is Pochettino.
Well, they can't get him if he goes there. Hang on.
I've just got one case to make. On some level, I agree with you, right? But let me just make a case. Lopetegui has taken over a relegation-threatened club. Unai Emery has taken over a relegation-threatened club.
They've got money. Wolves have got a structure.
Hang on,
Leeds don't have any money.
No, they do.
Well, have they spent any of it?
No,
they sold Calvin Phillips. They sold Calvin Phillips and they sold Rafinha for close to £100 million. And the players they brought in are of shocking quality.
But
they
just spent a fortune. This is what, look, I think that Marsh should have been sacked ages ago, but the timing, I'm not disagreeing with the sacking, but I am slightly disagreeing with the timing because they let him spend his money and he spent a lot and now they've sacked him. He's brought his men in and they've sacked him. It's a little bit like Thomas Tuchel. And also, by the way, Leeds got dough, you know. It's not all about that Radrazzani anymore. They've got the link.
I know, you know, the old San Francisco
49ers.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got the links.
Yeah. For me, there's one name, and it's Sam Allardyce.
No, you're not. You're not serious. It won't be him.
Not saying it will be. I know he's out of the game. I know he's. But
also, the mythology ended. He went down.
Yeah, I know it did. But West Brom were shocking, and they were a championship club. They had no money.
Yeah, but
they
went as well. It doesn't matter.
He did well with Everton. He did well with Palace.
I think he was a good manager.
Obviously, on some level, if you're listening to this or watching this, obviously on some level, I'm joking. But what I'm trying to say is, the last thing they need is a philosophical, holistic manager. If Bielsa is number two in the ranking, it says a lot about where Leeds have come. They have no direction.
Do you know what they need?
Allardyce is 50-1 if you fancy it, boo.
Okay. Hackney bets 100-1 because we're mates. But
deal.
But do you know what I'm trying to say? It's not going to be Allardyce. Of course not. It's the point. The point I'm trying to make is they need whoever that man is.
They need a Leeds man.
Is 4-5-1. 5-3-2, whatever it is, they need a back. They can't concede goal. They cannot be conceding the goals that they're conceding.
You've seen the film, The Damned United?
Yeah.
There's a scene in that, and obviously it didn't go well with Clough, but there's a scene in that with Clough where he just like, he just sort of rips apart the team that were there, rips them apart, you know, Billy Bremner and whoever, he really rips them apart. But it's just like, even though it didn't go well, it's so Leeds. It's like a man's man telling these players a few home truths, demanding more from them.
Mm.
And do you know who? Do you know, I'm just saying it all out loud. It's bloody Dyche, isn't it? That's who they needed.
Yeah.
You see, this is the issue, isn't it? You have to move first. Everton won the race.
Would you
for
want to go there? Because they don't have the players. They don't have the players.
No, but Leeds.
They've got Luke Hayden. They're still playing Luke Hayden at the back and all that. They've got nothing up front. They've got no power up front. They've got at least Dominic Calvert Lewin, Tarkowski, Cody.
You can't turn down Dwight McNeil. Leeds United are a big enough club to.
Everton are a big club than Leeds.
Of course, but what I'm saying is if Leeds had gone first.
Oh, right, yeah.
When Frank Lampard, you wouldn't know.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that Everton were coming. 100%. Are Leeds a shoe in for you? Relegation?
For relegation, yes. I can't think of anyone else to predict now because if they bring in somebody good, it's hard for us to actually.
The reality is, and this is why it's a very interesting season, whether it's the top or middle or bottom of the Premier League. There are three clubs that are. It's not one club doing a almost like Wigan when they came up with Paul Jewell and they're sort of punching for Europe. We're seeing Forest pull away.
They've done it.
We've seen Fulham. It's usually two or three who get promoted and go straight back down. It's only Bournemouth that are in that fight now. Yeah. And Fulham, Brentford and Brighton all have a case for their managers being the manager of the season.
I agree.
All three.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're punching. So they filled three spots and Newcastle, who are usually at the bottom of the table, roughly.
Yeah.
So there's four spots now that get sucked in and one of these big clubs have to go. And Leeds are the biggest club out of the three to go. Southampton and Bournemouth, let them go.
What about West Ham?
They got enough with Moyes.
I thought they looked good against Newcastle as well.
Declan Rice can keep the ball.
Yeah. Did you see any of Newcastle?
I saw bits of it. Yeah, I didn't see
the whole thing. They were weirdly good. They didn't start the game when the ref blew the whistle. They started the game about 6 minutes later and they conceded two goals. One was ruled out in the first 3 minutes of the game. But after that, they were arguably the better team.
I thought Craig Dawson leaving was very strange. Going to Wolves, scored on his debut against Liverpool. I would have scored on my debut against Liverpool.
It's Moyes, though. It's Moyes. He's just... I backed him last year because of that run that they went on. But do you know what I saw, which like terrified me? You know their form in 2022?
Oh, yeah, it's bad.
Do you know what I saw? I saw a list of the teams that they beat in the calendar year of 2022 under David Moyes. A year that, you know, they could have won a European trophy. Mm. So we were, you know, all of that was going on, wasn't it? They're massive and all that nonsense. I saw a list of the teams that they beat. Do you know the best team that they beat that year?
Who is it?
Villa. I'm not even joking. Like the
Steven Gerrard's Villa.
They beat Norwich twice and they beat Burnley twice. Honestly, they didn't win many games. And the best team that they beat, the biggest club that they beat that year, Villa.
Yeah. So Moyes really is maybe overachieving with maybe they got a lack of quality in that squad.
No, underachieving.
You think he's underachieving?
Underachieving, yeah. He's not getting the best. You know the good players, he can't get them to play. And that's applicable to Sebastian Haller. That's applicable to Paqueta.
Yeah.
That's applicable to Scamacca.
Yeah.
The good players, he can't get them to play.
Declan Rice is the only one that's a constant, and you could argue.
And he hasn't had a good season.
He's not had the best season,
no,
has he?
Not by his standards.
They should have sold him last summer if there was an offer for 150 million quid. Maybe that would have happened with Chelsea if they weren't so staunch about not selling him.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They could have got 150. He's probably worth 90 now, 100.
Bringing it back to Leeds, boys, just shortly. I think, personally, anyway, the most logical person to come in is probably Hasenhüttl. Because Marsh came after his Leipzig stint. They do the Red Bull model.
Oh, but what's the nonsense, Elliot? Why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this desperation to be Red Bull? Like, why is Red Bull good? Why does that work? Why do Leeds want to be Red Bull?
Because of the model that they have of building successful players, selling them for a lot.
What does that, I agree with Roy. There is no model. Well, there is a model, but I don't think it's a particularly good model. I don't think it's a very interesting model.
I don't care. Yeah, this whole Red Bull thing. Oh, you know, they're trying to do this, replicate the brilliance of the Red Bull clubs. Sod the Red Bull clubs. Like, Leeds United would be so much better off just doing what they could be good at.
Yeah.
And what they could do, they could get two banks of four, they could make Elland Road a fortress, they could survive this year, and then maybe next year they go for a little bit more dazzle.
Yeah.
But this, do you think it's going to go that way then, Al? You think that they're going to stick to this Red Bull nonsense and go for Hasenhüttl?
Potentially, yeah. I think they may follow and continue what they believe to be the right model, which is like the money ball kind of making logical decisions, all the stats and where they think things can match up. And I know obviously we're you know, slating it right now, or you two certainly are, but Leipzig have been fairly successful in the Bundesliga. Still this season could potentially win the league. They're up there. Like, it's not, yeah, Leipzig it's not a complete failure. They're in the Champions League.
Yeah, but Leipzig with all due respect, I know what you're trying to say, you're completely right in that regard, but Leipzig are a new club. They're not a very well-liked club in Germany. They're a club started by a brand, which is the Red Bull brand. I think what we're trying to say with Leeds is that
Leeds are better than that.
You don't need to you need to get some identity. And actually, I know the Bielsa model was this kind of philosophical thing. They played some beautiful football points when they got promoted from the Championship, but in the Premier League it didn't work. He got sacked. You now need to change. You know, Everton have changed, and for the better. Look, they've already beaten Arsenal. If Leeds stick with this philosophy, they're going to get relegated.
That's the thing. The love that they seem to have for this philosophy and trying to convert to Red Bullism, it hasn't exactly stood them in good stead, has it? It's not as if it's gone really well for them.
Like, a couple of seasons in the Prem.
A couple of seasons in the Premier League is what they've got.
22 years.
Yeah. Which Burnley achieved by not going for the Red Bull system.
Stoke stayed up for 8 years, didn't they? 7 years?
Yeah,
Stoke,
Premier League club for a decade. Fulham were a Premier League club for a decade.
If they go to the Championship, they could be down there for another 10 years. And don't forget, Leeds came from League One. I mean, it's hard to stay in the Premier League.
16 years out of the Premier League when they went.
So when Stoke went relegated, one of the biggest budgets in the Championship, they're not back up. West Brom might not, you know, Middlesbrough.
Yeah, not easy. People might have Man City to contend with the Championship.
Well, that's a different. We've done a video for that and a different. let's not blend the videos. We're talking about Leeds United.
We're done with Leeds United, actually. One now for Rory. Chelsea have made an absolute ton of signings in this transfer window, and we want you to rank them. You're either going to give them guest list to the club, you'd accept them into the club and you like them. Denied entry, you're going to just say no, absolute failure, you're not coming in. Or membership pending.
Okay. Can I tag on to this as well?
You can as well, Boovy.
We'll do it as a combined.
And we will start off.
You go, it's your thing first, and I'll tag on to you.
And we will start off with the biggest of them all. Enzo Fernandez, 107 million.
Yeah, obviously what I have to do is subtract the price from this. I can only weigh up the footballer. I'm not bringing in, like, £100 million. £100 million for a geezer who's played, like, a dozen games. It's obviously a lot of money. What I would say is, I think he was brilliant at the World Cup. Like, I noticed him. I genuinely noticed him. Like, I saw a few people sort of talking about it, going, when I watched Argentina, I didn't notice their midfield. I was like, well, you should have done. Like, he was a very good player. He didn't play their first two games. When he got in the team, they couldn't drop him. He changed the games for them once he got
involved.
They
beat Australia.
Beat Australia, beat Poland. He scored the goal against Mexico.
I mean, you just give the
answer. No, but you played. Mexico, Poland, well, they Australia. Also beat France in the final, which he played
the World
as well.
Cup. I mean, the World Cup is never an in. I mean, Real Madrid have always done that kind of sign the best player from the World Cup for decades, haven't they? And it's like, I don't think that is an indicator at all. I mean, Nicolas Otamendi was one of the best centre-backs at the tournament. Yeah, Harry Maguire.
Harry Maguire didn't have a good World Cup, though.
He had a fantastic World Cup, Harry Maguire. For me. But
Overall, with Enzo Fernandez, I think the other thing that we have to bring into the equation here is how desperately Chelsea needed Enzo Fernandez. If it doesn't work with Enzo Fernandez, fine. But I'm really glad that we made the move because we had a midfield. We had such a pitiful midfield. We had such a passive midfield for such a long time. You know, that Jorginho and Kovacic pivot. It's like, I swear these two geezers, one of them is a very good footballer. The other one I don't really rate. But I don't think either of them have ever changed the result of a game that they've ever played in.
Yeah, it's just...
like, whatever the result
would be... If
you're
already winning, they look good. If you lose, then they don't change
it.
You're right.
They've literally, especially Jorginho, like, he's never changed the result of a game that he's played in.
Yeah.
What are we giving? What are we giving Enzo?
I like the Enzo Fernandez signing. I think he's too expensive. I think he's far too expensive. But the days of rational spending's gone out the window years ago. So what am I meant to... like, it's at least 50% too dear. At least 50% too dear, but I'm happy with this signing, and I would like to invite him into the club if he would lose the hair dye.
Yeah, for me, he's not allowed in the club
because of the hair dye.
No, just because he's so overrated. It's untrue so far.
That means pending, because I'm saying pending, he's in. Yeah, you're saying he's not in.
Okay, next up, Mudrick, 62 million.
Fuck yeah.
Very difficult, this one, because something strange happened. I don't know if this has ever happened before with trying to assess a footballer. But in Chelsea's last game, he didn't have a bad game. He just didn't feature.
He got hooked at half-time, Rory.
Yeah, but he didn't touch the ball. He didn't do anything.
True. He did touch the ball, and a couple of touches were absolutely shocking.
I've never known a footballer to be less involved.
Yeah, that's worrying in itself.
To be less involved. Worrying.
If you're not getting the ball, against, look, Fulham are very well organised, fine. If you're not getting the ball, and you were at home, weren't you?
Yes.
If you're not getting the ball in those situations, that is a subconscious, subliminal thing that they don't trust you on the ball.
Or it's also another, like, it can be explained by the fact that Cucurella's behind him who can't pass straight.
Yeah, and Chelsea fans were sort of talking to me on Twitter about the fact the lack of support for him in terms of the overlap. Mm. I get that. But there was a couple of take-ons that were really poor. There was a couple of passes.
He did look lively against Liverpool, though. So
yeah, I think you're talking about one moment where he flicks it around Matip and Milner,
isn't it? Milner had to get subbed off the back of it.
It felt like a kind of deflected little bit of trickery, a bit like an Antony kind of half skill, not a real bit of skill. I'll just say it quickly and I'll let you, whatever. Mm. I think he'll go down as the worst signing in the history of Premier League football and the history of European football. And I'm not saying this. I don't think he's got the physicality. I don't think he's got the proven track record to do anything.
Do you really not think it's going
to
work?
I'm not even just trying to wind you up as a Chelsea rival or anything like that. I don't think he's got anything of quality if he's a 15 million quid gamble for Brighton, Brentford, okay. Even 25 million for Chelsea, part of the academy setup when he's a bit younger. He's right now, he's got to hit the ground running. He's got to get you Champions League football. And he's already struggled to do that. You've got no results with him, no wins with him in the squad in two. So for me, he'll be the worst signing in the history of Premier League football, in my opinion.
Okay, that's huge. What I say to that is, it's very difficult for me to judge here because I thought he looked quite lively against Liverpool and I thought he was completely insignificant against Fulham. And that's all the data that we've got to go on. I think he's far too expensive. But I have nothing else to say because I'm not going to do that weird thing that people do in our industry. I'm not going to pretend to watch Shakhtar Donetsk game. I don't know, man. I've never seen the Giza play for Shakhtar Donetsk. So I can literally judge it on the two performances that we've seen, which is a combined tally of 60 minutes of football.
It's crazy.
Yeah. In that 60 minutes, he's looked quite lively in one half and quite poor in the other. So I would say pending, but Boovy seems passionate. Boovy's more passionate than me about...
Yeah, Boovy's denying everyone. It is exclusive.
No, that's the whole point. It is exclusive. And
if he's not joining the club, no way.
Is he pending? Live with him on the pending list or not?
You know when you actually queue up for a club and the bouncer doesn't even want to check your ID, you're not getting
it. You're just
that's
not
how
in.
Bad it is.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
not
yeah.
even gonna, I don't care if Mudryk's got a driving license in Ukrainian, in English, he's got an EU passport or
just
whatever.
Just fake something about the dress sense. Just fake it. Like, it doesn't matter what it is.
Blue jackets. He's got bad vibes. And obviously, we talked about earlier, he was tweeting about or Instagramming about Arsenal a few weeks before. No way is he getting in the club.
Got a moody old Barnett as well.
Yeah. Strange Barnett.
Moody Barnett.
Weird party. I know that you boys there said, you know, you're not watching him for Shakhtar, but, you know, me, due to having bets on every single day, I watched a lot, not of him in Ukraine, by the way. I mean the Champions League, and he tore apart Celtic, Real Madrid in a few games.
You can't
cut him off there though. He said another word after that. No, he said Celtic,
Real Madrid.
And then he said Real Madrid.
There was a delay in the headphones.
There was no delay. You just jumped the gun.
There was a delay. You're closer to him than I am.
There's a lesson in this though. There's a moral lesson, isn't there? Let people complete their sentences before you go wading into them.
But I'd give him time. I'd give him time.
What are you doing against Real Madrid?
Pending. Scored loads of goals, mate. Bundles of them, loads of them, battered them.
You've got to remember, Shakhtar beat Real Madrid in one leg. And I think he was key to that.
Yeah.
Game.
Champions of Europe, mate.
He's worth 80 million quid, is he?
Bargain.
Is he at Shakhtar right now?
No.
Where is he at now? Chelsea. How much did you pay for him?
80 mil.
80 mil.
There's a cost of living crisis. There's some people can't afford tea bags, and you're spending 80 million quid. That's like a fight. You know how much a fighter jet costs, the RAF?
Is that your go-to thing? People can't afford tea bags?
Yeah.
Why tea bears? Is that like a prerequisite
for
life?
It's a staple of British society.
That's fair.
Has been since the
yeah,
the
I couldn't
days.
Live without tea, in fairness.
I'm of a coffee man.
I have tea on the go all day long. Is I have one man? On the go constantly.
When you got one here?
No, because...
Oh, right, mate, not we,
no, I don't. Right. Nobody offers to make me one. I don't know where the kitchen is.
next up, Noni Madueke from PSV. I've liked 29 mil.
I've liked the look of him. He's in
cheaper,
the club.
Cheaper than he's a cheaper deal, so it's
yeah. I think Madueke is the kind of signing that I want us to make as well. Like, you know, if I'm being completely frank with you, I don't really want to sign Mudryk. I don't really look. I hope it works, and I really hope that in a few years' time we're looking at him in this way that we looked at Eden Hazard. I think it's unlikely, but I hope that is the case. But I don't really want to be signing players like that, you know, for exorbitant amounts of money, being held to ransom when they've told us explicitly that they want to play for Arsenal, that they want to join Mikel Arteta's vision, and suddenly Chelsea have gone in there and just like made it impossible because we have so much money that we can't even like carry it all. You know, like Scrooge McDuck in round his house, isn't he? Like swimming about in a dough. So no, I don't really want that sort of signing. But Madueke is a signing that I like.
Yeah, English kind of... English, you know, that's English, good for
North,
Salon Valley,
out of North London. Out of North London. Yeah. I think it's pending. Everything has to be
pending. I think it's pending
as
well.
Yeah, it's pending. But we'll go pending, Al. We've agreed on one.
Okay. You've finally agreed. I don't know if you'll agree on this one or not. A shaky start. João Félix, 10 million loan.
João Félix is one of the only players in the club at the moment that is undoubted quality. Yeah. Like there is no two ways about it. Mm. João Félix is good enough to play for virtually every club in the country if he gets it going.
Yeah.
So having a player like that around at Chelsea, just having a player of that level is great. Dodgy debut. Dodgy in terms of people were being very kind about it, I thought. They were going, didn't he play well?
He
missed the chance, got himself sent off.
Yeah.
I don't know. We seem to... You know, if a different player had done that, I don't think people would be so kind about it.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that overall, I think he played well, he was lively, but he missed a glaring opportunity, you know, pretty much just the keeper to beat.
Yeah.
And then got sent off, and that cost us the game. But he's probably, if we take N'Golo Kanté out of this conversation, because I don't know when he'll feature again, in fact, he is definitely Chelsea's best player, isn't he?
Thiago Silva, Reece James. João
Félix is the most natural baller
football, yeah.
At a club.
But then no, you know, guarantee of signing him if you want to sign him.
No, it's very expensive.
Incredible wages as well.
They do have first refusal.
Yeah, but do they?
Apparently I've
heard first refusal.
If someone comes in with more money, they can do it.
First refusal doesn't mean that you get to sign it, because obviously if he does really well, they'll want him back.
Yeah, City had the first refusal on Pedro Porro, I think, and we didn't get him. So it's terrible business. I'm sorry.
It's expensive business, but it's not terrible business.
Well, the issue is he's not good. Already, the sending off means that's, what, three games that he's not been able to contribute. You've already fallen off to the point you're 20 points behind Arsenal. Mm. I think it's 20 points.
But you know, if we knock Dortmund out of the Champions League?
Yeah.
One of the main reasons that we could potentially knock Dortmund out of the Champions
League. You lose to them, mate. I think you lose and you come 10th.
Aren't you I'm talking Liverpool? Hypothetically, though.
No. Well, you and Liverpool. So, I mean,
I'm talking hypothetically. If we beat Dortmund, one of the main reasons... if we beat Dortmund, it will be because João Félix has a good game.
Yeah, that is a factor. I don't think it's enough for the short-termism of it, for me.
Yeah, see, I like this signing. I just like having proven quality footballer. You know, João Félix is an elite level footballer.
He is. I don't think he's proven. I don't think he's proven enough.
He's not Premier League proven.
He's had subpar years in Atletico Madrid, and that's not his fault, because of the system. Mm. Benfica, he was a bit like Enzo Fernandez. He had about 40, 50 games for Benfica, then
get
sold.
This feels harsh, Boo, to me. Like, João Félix, effectively what we're saying here is that João Félix isn't allowed in our club. Like, that's
for
who
me,
do we think we are?
I love him. If he came to City, he was linked to City a few years ago, he's allowed in the club. But he's playing for Graham Potter. He's playing for a side 10th or 11th,
hang on a minute, what?
9th in the league.
If he went to City, he's allowed in, but because he's at Chelsea, he's not.
Because this deal at Chelsea right now for his career is wrong. He's not going to help you get into the Champions League. You're going to get banged out. You're not in the FA Cup. You're not in the League Cup. You're going to get banged out by Dortmund. Dortmund are better than you.
You can't say that as fact.
I think they'll beat you.
I think they'll beat us.
Yeah.
But you can't put that as your reason.
Use as a counter argument that João Félix will thus help you beat Dortmund.
No, but
I don't think they will.
It's as relevant as you saying that they won't. I'm only saying this.
They're both similar arguments. All I'm saying is I don't think he'll do enough in that game. And I think you'll have a really poor season.
Can we come back to this after the Dortmund home and away league?
Of course.
So if Chelsea beat Dortmund and he's integral and assists the goal, whatever, he's in.
Fine. But right now he's not in.
Well, he's pending.
Yeah, for me, he's not in.
He's pending.
So he's borderline not in pending.
No, he's pending.
He's pending then.
He's pending.
Pending, fine.
Don't be so pedantic.
Two more. But
can I just say one immediately? Because this guy's in, like straight in. In fact, he can sit where Bouvier is. Benoit Badiashile.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Non-negotiable, just in.
He'll be a fantastic
Absolutely brilliant. Like, bearing in mind the defence that he came into. It's all very well. You know when you go to certain clubs, like maybe signing for Man City last year, everything's going well, everything's rosy, Pep Guardiola's like living the dream, and you slot in and play well, great. He's come into a back line with Cucurella, who doesn't know what day it is. Kepa Arrizabalaga behind him, who's one of the worst goalkeepers in the league. Azpilicueta, who hasn't been good enough to play football for years. And he still looks class and elevated our back
line. Wait till Chilwell's there. Reece James.
Benoit Badiashile's in. We can move on now. Who's easy. Next?
Next and final is David Datro Fofana.
I thought he looked lively, but I don't know enough about him. I thought he looked lively when he came on the other day. I thought he could have scored, actually.
Not very much money, so that's fair enough.
Pending.
That is decided for who joins the club.
Badashile, welcome. Our first honorary member.
Big as well. He must be one of the tallest centre-backs in the league.
Benoit Badashile is our first honorary member of the club.
Yeah, good player.
Boothie can fight him on a Misfits card.
He'd have you over.
He's a professional athlete, and I'm sitting here on my lard arse next to you. Fuck you, you know.
Next up, just a quick word, boys, on because we covered it on stream with Adam. Adam's not here today, of course. But Liverpool, what is happening?
For me, it's the seven-year factor. I don't think Klopp has proven in his managerial career. He knows how to get over that seven-year hump. We saw it with Pochettino's Spurs after a five-year period. It's hard to rejuvenate a squad. And there are arguments about should Klopp leave or should he stay. Now, if you get rid of Klopp, which isn't going to happen from the top down, does he choose to leave? That's a different debate. You have to build your club around Klopp. You have to give him the finances. However it happens, whether it's Moneyball or whether it's real big money like Bellingham, for example, Tchouaméni could have happened last summer potentially. You build your club around him for another 7 years as opposed to someone new for the next 2-3 years. And it goes, it could be, if they get this wrong in terms of how they manage his expectations, his future at the club, it could be 30 years before they win a league again.
I can't believe how it's gone. I'm really surprised. I didn't anticipate this. I don't think anybody did, if they were honest. Like, I actually anticipated them having a bad year.
Mm.
But I said they finished third.
I thought they'd come fourth, yeah.
I said they finished, in my sort of prediction,
yeah.
I said third. And I was doing it with my mate, Addy, who's a Liverpool fan. He livid with me. I said third. Like, absolutely furious.
First or second?
First or second only. Non-negotiably.
Yeah.
First or second. I thought they're going to have a dodgy year. It won't be as good, but they'll be third. This has like totally surprised me. On one level, I think it's quite easily rectified. You bring in a midfielder, you back Klopp. Hopefully one of the signings up front,
the
whether
injuries,
it's Gakpo,
Van Dijk comes back. And
whether it's Gakpo, whether it's Nunez, maybe it's both of them. But if one of those starts firing, they're kind of fine if you bring in the midfield. But on another level, I just think, is this really problematic, almost unsalvageable? And do they therefore need a shift? Like, do they... I really don't know where they go from here.
It's unfathomable because who is the person that replaces Klopp? The person who replaces Klopp has to be as big a name as him. I don't know anyone. I think he's the second best manager in world football. He's one of the greats of all time in terms of, I think he's top 20 of all time, arguably. It's him and Guardiola miles in front of Conte, Simeone for me, and Tuchel. I think they're a slightly lower level. That's just my opinion. Ancelotti's in there as well with Pep and Klopp. If you don't go and get an Ancelotti, I'm not saying they would do that, that the void at Liverpool would be so huge, they might even struggle for consistent Champions League football again. They're competing with a Chelsea squad that have just spent 600 million quid from their owners. Mm. They've got Newcastle with infinite amount of money that might punch above their weight way earlier than we all thought.
And then
City are going to be there.
Do you know the other United thing, Boobie? Do you know who you have to... You know when you do that, when you reel off the competitors now? Do you know what I think you have to do?
Mm.
You have to start factoring in the likes of the clubs that you never would have done. Like, at what point do we have to really start talking about Brighton seriously?
Brighton's consistently. Villa next year with Unai Emery.
Villa next year. I mean, Fulham are doing incredibly well. Brentford.
Everton.
See where Brentford are in the league?
That's crazy.
Like, Brentford are going to play in Europe next year. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So it's all very well thinking, like, at one point, it was great, the top four, because there were only four clubs that ever were going to get into the top four. You know, before City came along, there was top four. And there were four clubs.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter. It actually didn't matter. In terms of your economics, obviously you wanted to win the league. But in terms of your economics, you were virtually guaranteed first or fourth.
Yeah.
You know, Arsenal got fourth every year. They were never going to win the league, but they'd get fourth every year.
Mm.
Now, to get fourth, you have to finish above about... There's probably about half a dozen at least. Half a dozen football clubs are going to be there and thereabouts. So it's very unforgiving.
It's hard.
But I don't know where Liverpool go from here. I honestly, I'm so baffled by it. I didn't anticipate it at all. And it's rare that this happens to me.
Mm.
I'm kind of out of ideas. You know, they've lost their last three games, 3-0.
It's crazy.
And have you seen the teams they've played in those?
Yeah, average size.
Average size.
Average size. The big thing for me, I'm still pro, you keep Klopp, you wait it out. I think Chelsea have come 10th or 11th. I think Conte under a season, Mourinho in his second spell. Sometimes you can just come 10th. The lack of European football is a blessing. You play one game a week and next summer they go and sign two or three top class players. That is the best scenario, because for me, but the only debate for a lot of Liverpool fans who know a lot more about the situation than me is the way you lose football matches is very, very important. And the way they down tools in the final 20 minutes, I've never seen it under Jurgen Klopp. They are so low on physicality, on intensity. They don't press.
He's making mistakes as well. He's making mistakes. Mm. Like the Trent Alexander-Arnold perennial question won't go away. And I think he's making mistakes 100%. On that. His signings aren't good enough.
Mm.
Darwin Núñez and Cody Gakpo, they're not good. Like they're not good enough, or at least they're not playing in a level that is at a level that is well enough.
No, Gakpo's not hit the ground.
I think the one saving grace for them, maybe boys, is they've got a lot of players coming back from injury. You know, Jota's back soon.
Yeah, Jota
off enough.
Jota, Diaz, Firmino. But do you know the other thing? What they haven't done? They haven't kept the squad moving. But how's Naby Keita still there? How's Oxlade-Chamberlain still there?
I think it's the midfield. I think they've tried it. I think Diaz for Mane in a perfect world kind of makes sense long term financially, because they've replaced light for light. He's 5, 6, 7 years younger than Mane, and you get Mane out the door with a bit of money before his contract expires. But then you look back at it now and you think you've sold top three players in your position in the world.
They've got no money.
Top
for him
five
as well.
In the world.
They got next to no money.
Like, he's a wicked European rivals.
He's a wicked footballer.
Crazy.
He's a wicked footballer who was so integral to what they do.
Could play false nine, like left wing.
The form of Salah this year is slightly linked to the form of the lack of form of Sadio Mane for Liverpool. Lack of presence.
Crazy.
So I just don't know. I just don't know what they're going to do. But in terms of recycling players, they make no money. Like, genuinely, can you think of a player that they've signed? Sorry, can you think of a player that they've sold for a proper rate? So they got 30 million for Sadio Mane, arguably the best player in the world last year. They don't, you know, they sign players for quite big money occasionally, but they just don't sell. They don't keep it moving.
A few of them do stay there. That's the point you're obviously trying to make. But you know, Van Dijk's been there a while. He looks a bit stale when he has played this season.
Yeah, but we had Eden Hazard for years. Weak. We had Eden Hazard for years, and then we made a fortune on him.
Yeah,
you know,
is Torres the last one?
Torres, they made big money. Yeah, like it's the last
mil. Sterling
50 mil.
Yeah, it's a long time ago though. But that would be pre-FSG.
Look at Man City. We sold Jesus for 50, 35 for Zinchenko, 50 to you lot for Sterling, and we bought him for 50. You know, it's not bad.
Yeah.
50 right, mil boys. To Southampton for four players.
Right, boys, let's move it on and get into some people's favourite bits of the pod, may I add.
What are you wearing there, by the way? You look like a weird little Yeti. And like, what are you wearing?
I've got a jumper on. What's wrong with this?
What is that? Some sort of fleecy number?
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Are you going to be cut in? Are people going to see you?
Yeah, they can see me.
And you knew that before you wore that?
Yeah.
What's wrong with this?
Do you buy that at Millets?
In the club. What is going on here?
But if he's got the fucking £10 Matalan t-shirt on.
What are you on Matalan? It's Nike. A real brand, mate. You've gone to Millets, mate. What are you on about?
Some weird fleecy number and it's sitting in a little cubby hole.
This is fine. There's nothing wrong with this. It's just a jumper. Fuck it, man. Right. Overrated or underrated? Some people's favourite section of the show. I'm going to throw it over to you first, Boovy.
Yep.
And number one is Neymar.
For me, he's overrated. I still think he's fantastic. I think that the prime season where he won the treble with Barcelona, but at least the Champions League against Juventus in the final, he was unplayable at points. But he's not worth 200 million quid. If you're listening to this or watching this and you think he's anywhere near Ronaldinho, you need to leave football forever and need to go to a private island and play badminton by yourself. Honest to God. And get a dog and just take the dog for a long walk around his private island. Go to Richard Branson's island, because Neymar's nowhere near Ronaldinho. He's nowhere near Rivaldo. I know slightly different positions. Romario, Pele. People are comparing him on Twitter to Pele. It's embarrassing. World class on his day, but that day was for 2 years.
I disagree, I think, Boovy. I think he's actually underrated because I don't think people rate him particularly highly. I think the paradigm that you're putting forward here is one that is generally endorsed. Mm. People don't love him. People don't like him. And the players that you compared him to, I mean, it's all very... Ronaldinho, I think you're right, but he's Neymar's best player than Rivaldo. He is. Like, I think Neymar is in the top five Brazilian footballers of all time.
No,
he is. If I was to very quickly do my top five Brazilian footballers of all time, you go definitely Pele, definitely Ronaldo, R9,
Socrates.
Definitely Ronaldinho. I think those three are in, and then I think it's probably Neymar and maybe somebody from that 70 team, get Garrincha or It's difficult, but I definitely think that Neymar, I think he's underrated overall because people, the general consensus of people don't like him, they don't rate him. Whereas, look, even if you just take your opinion and my opinion out of this, I'd say the average football fan doesn't rate him as highly as they should.
Maybe that's where you're right then. I'm able to, because all I see is the narrative is him being a £200 million player for PSG. And he's comparable to Pele, and that's where I think it's wrong. But if you're saying the general narrative is that he is a little bit underrated, then maybe you're right.
Oh, interesting. To come to some sort of agreement there in the end.
Compromise.
The FA Cup.
Terribly underrated. Terribly underrated. I think it's a wonderful competition. It's the oldest cup competition in the world. I will always get a huge buzz out of the cup. I honestly adore it. I think if you ask me, Chelsea finished top four or 10th, but a cup with finishing 10th, I will take the cup every single day of the week. A day out at Wembley, there is nothing quite like it. And it's historic. When you win it, it matters. When you finish 4th, ultimately all it is doing is getting you entrance to another competition. The FA Cup, the victory in the FA Cup lives forever. The fact that Arsenal are the record holders with a very impressive 13 is because they have won it on so many occasions. I'm desperate to win the FA Cup. I hate going out of it. I will always be heartbroken. Everything I've said here, by the way, it's definitely more true about the FA Cup, but it's applicable to the League Cup. Sneering at cup competitions is not for me and totally unacceptable. If you feel that way, you are denied entry to the club forever.
I agree. And also, I think you can take it further than the point you made about would you come 10th or win the FA Cup? I think that's a point for maybe top four, top six sides. Would you get relegated and win the FA Cup? There are a lot of sides that have done that. And look at Wigan, for example, against City. Would they take the FA Cup, you know, with Whelan as the owner? You get your lifelong fan. He gets to see, you know, you get to see Ben Watson in the final score against Man City, you know, the juggernaut kind of story. And they're now they're in the Championship with, you know, Kurt Torres.
Football is about glory, isn't it? It's about glorious moments. It's about historic moments. It's about those things that you can't even predict. It's that buzz that you get, that euphoria that you get. It's that moment. You know, it's that, like, we're all football fans. We watch loads of football. You sit through 90 minutes and all you're doing really is chasing a dragon. You're waiting for that one high, that one buzz. And that buzz is a cup final. That buzz isn't top four. And look, I agree with you. I wouldn't take Chelsea being relegated over a cup because that could be disastrous for us, as you'll soon find out. But I would certainly, 16th in a cup over top four every day of the week and twice on a Sunday.
Agree.
Okay, another agreement. Lastly, retro football shirts.
Embarrassing.
Really? You strike me as a man that would wear them.
Me?
Yeah, you're very cool, right, aren't you?
I don't think I've ever seen Boovy wear a football shirt.
It's been a long day, I get it. You've been just come back from the Bahamas, you're desperate for chat, I get it.
I mean it in a way that you're very cool.
I appreciate that.
I could imagine you, like the kind of person that wears them, they're very much your boozing in Dalston, boozing in East London, and they've got on like the Man City brother shirt.
Yeah. Like 99 or whatever.
I thought that would be your vibe. Drinking cider out of cups.
Now, the issue is that what you say about that is completely right, up to the point where the person wearing that shirt didn't own it originally and has spent 250 quid of it from a certain brand that we all know well. You know what I mean? So I have so many shirts at home, and one of my favourites is the Reebok Thomas Cook kit from Stuart Pearce back in the day, a Kevin Keegan kit when he was the manager, Nicolas Anelka when he came to the club. Thick, horrible, Cochlear Sportif kits. But I'm not reselling them for hundreds of pounds.
Do you wear them?
No,
quite. I mean, do you wear it down the gym or do you wear it anywhere?
No, because, you know, well, firstly, because I'm too big for it now. Obviously, there are child kits, a lot of them. But that kind of, why would I go back to that kit when I've already, do you know what I mean? Mm. And then I have to pay 150 quid for an England shirt from Gaza in 96.
Yeah. No, I just think football shirts overall.
I think the marketplace where people feel compelled to wear them and they spend 200 million quid and there's 200 quid and there's a markup from these websites, I think that's embarrassing.
What about the retro kits that are like 30 quid remix?
I don't really wear football shirts. I wouldn't wear a football shirt ever. I'd wear it to play football in, and occasionally I get them, so I end up in the gym in it because I'm just looking for something to wear.
It's becoming symbolic of a football kit. It's a football kit.
I feel embarrassed wearing a football shirt as well. Like, you know, if I'm in front of my missus and I'm wearing a football kit, I just feel a bit like, oh God, I'm so like, it's like playing dress up, isn't it? It's like, why are you dressed up as a footballer? Why are you dressing up as a professional footballer? You're not a professional footballer. Why are you dressing like that? Yeah. Be like, Shin, I might as well walk around my house dressed as a policeman or something. Like, what am I doing?
Didn't you do that in the Bill?
No, I was a criminal. I was a drug dealer in the Bill.
I was watched a clip of you the other
Why
week.
Are you Googling me, you weirdo? You've just admitted Googling me.
No, I didn't.
You admitted Googling
Some guy restarted his account on TikTok of you and you got beat up by Ian Beale.
Why are you doing that?
Can you reveal that on the podcast? Because everyone's listening to podcasts. They love you, mate. They've missed you and all that. And, you know, you've been in the Bahamas. How did Ian Beale, he picked you up by your collar, slapped you around a bit on national TV? I mean, Ian Beale's about 5'4".
That's taller than me. But do you know what I don't understand here, right? Do you know what you're doing? What you're trying to do is shame me.
No, there's nothing wrong with being on EastEnders. I love EastEnders. It's my favourite show.
But you're actually shaming yourself.
Why?
Because you're clearly going onto the TikToks and typing in my name.
No, someone's tagged me, innit?
No, don't lie. As if somebody's gone out of their way.
Rory's Barnett keeps tagging me. Rory's Barnett is an account.
Rory Barnett? Me. Yeah. That account is mental. It puts my hair on like other people. It puts my hair on like Roberto Baggio.
Since the club's started, he's restarted the account after 3 years of inactivity. And the first clip I see is Ian Beale. He's running across the square.
Rory's Barnett.
I can't believe you murdered Patrick Truman. You're wronging.
I tried to. I didn't.
Oh, yeah,
I didn't succeed. But you know the meme? He's an old man. You know the meme of him going into the cans and that? That was me. Just over the head. Over the head. I pistol whipped him. So don't mess, mate. Don't mess.
It's unbelievable. I love you, Senator. It's better than Emmerdale.
It's better, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it since I was in it. I literally haven't watched an episode since I left.
It's fantastic.
Right, next up, boys, is Taxi 4. And this is where, you know, something gets removed from the club forever. Boofy had James Alcott last week, but I hope it's not another YouTuber this week.
Oh, yeah, maybe this.
Boofy, who is it? What are you banning from the club?
Can Rory go first?
Okay, let Rory go first.
I'm Alex. I'm Alex from the club forever. And I believe that he may operate and function in these here parts. I think that this neck of the woods, this like fashionable East London, could be where he resides and spends a lot of his time. He seems to delight in finding TikToks of me and sharing them in a group that is dedicated to football, which is a group where its entire being, the entire raison d'etre of this group is football. Think about the purity of that group. Yeah, it is a group founded upon football lovers. It is a group founded upon creating a safe space for football fans. All we're meant to do in that group is post kickoff times and invite people to play football.
Yeah.
I'm Alex uses that group as some sort of mechanism to shame me. He chooses to put clips from TikTok into that group. And do you know that group? It's so sacred. That group should be used not for the furtherance of your own humour, not for the furtherance of your own attempts to shame me, but simply for the furtherance of the beautiful game. What does this chief do? He constantly finds TikToks of me from 2007 and puts them in this group, shaming me.
Yeah.
He therefore is barred from the club forever.
I'm Alex gone. Boovy, who have you got?
Mine is a brief taxi for Pep Guardiola for me.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I think he can redeem himself. But right now, we're talking early February 2023.
You can't ban Guardiola. I don't want to ban Guardiola from the club.
This is a temporary ban.
Yeah, this is a temporary ban that can be resurrected after a short period of time. How would you go into a game against Spurs where you've never scored a goal in the league, never got a win in the league at least? You don't play your best midfielder for a manager that claims that he would have played 11 midfielders if he could for Barcelona. He loves the idea of, you know, quality midfielders. Doesn't start him. Doesn't start Laporte or Diaz. And he plays a weird back three and we lose 1-0 to Spurs. It's absolutely shocking. We give Arsenal all the credibility of going on to win the Premier League after they drop points. So for me right now, Pep Guardiola, and he let Cancelo go. So we've got four or five fundamental issues at Man City, and Guardiola has to address them. So for me right now, he has to be in the back of that cab, getting on Twitter, looking at my Twitter to understand how to improve Man City.
God's sake.
Fair. I intro, do you end?
Thanks for listening.
You're so rubbish at this bit.
Why? Oh,
There's one last thing, by the way, we're trying to get out,
I know, but the next live game that we're doing is next Monday, and it is the Merseyside Derby at 7:30 PM.
Everton favourites for that.
What is your best memory or favourite memory of the Merseyside Derby?
Jagielka in front of the cop.
What, the volley?
Why are you just looking at me? No, but you have to say words. If you do this to me...
your idea.
If you do this to me...
Yeah, I'm waiting for you to say the punchline.
That's it?
The goal.
Jaggy? Well, no.
Was it a goal hit the post?
Of course it's a goal.
Was it a goal?
Of course it's a goal. What on earth? Come on,
it went in.
I'm just talking about one where he rocketed it into the rosette, am I?
Yeah, that's
talking about the goal in the last minute.
That's the same one for me. Oh, yeah, that's the same one for me.
Jaggy Elka was huge. I like the old ones. Do you remember Robbie Fowler? Oh, I'll tell you a good one. I'll tell you a really good one. Robbie Fowler, the Everton fans used to call him Smackhead. They used to say that he was on drugs. And he scored. He scored a game. It wasn't in this game, right? It wasn't in this fixture. Oh, no, it was. He scored for Liverpool against Everton at Goodison Park. And he ran round a pitch, smacking his own head.
Like, that's just great. I don't remember that quite. But
yeah. That was a brilliant one. Do you know Steve Gerrard scored one of the best goals I've ever seen in this game? Like, it sort of ricocheted to him on the edge of the box. And he's running away from the goal. And the ball's travelling away from the goal. And he sort of whips it into the far corner. Do you know the one Liverpool fans will say?
Yeah.
Gary McAllister, free kick. Do you remember that? Gary McAllister scored a free kick in the last minute. Yeah, long
yeah,
range.
Yeah, yeah.
In the last minute. I think that's one that they will...
Everton don't have too many. They got a shocking record in the last 20 years. I know it's been slightly better recently.
Yeah, I remember Cahill scoring. Yeah, it hasn't been good.
Jack Yelka was for me the first one.
Yeah, but no, over the years, it was... It's a great game.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think when we were kids, it was like seen as being a very friendly derby. I think they used to kind of support one another a bit, but I think it's gone that. I think there is like genuine rivalry there now. And this will be intense because they both need the points for very different reasons.
100%. Yeah. We're going to have to leave it there. Make sure you give it 5 stars on all the relevant podcasting platforms. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you check out Rory and myself and of course Adam McCullough on his socials. We'll see you soon.